Hello there, and welcome to Trending Now with Josh Arnold and Rick Moore. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and your co-host, of course, is Josh Arnold. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, I don't hear you there. All right, there we go. What do we have planned for this morning?
We have Cynthia McClory, who we started to interview last week, and we ran into some technical difficulties, so she's up first. And then we have Tom Gould from Peabody, who's going to be talking with us about the Centennial Parade that was this past Sunday, and some of the other celebrations that are transpiring as part of Peabody's Centennial Celebration, and one other person, and we're on the fence. We'll know when we call which person that's going to be.
All righty.
And then
keep in mind.
Then you have the Greg Verger interview following that.
Yeah, we'll talk with Greg a little bit about what's going on coming up with his unfinished music program. So we have that more coming up on Trending Now, so stay with us.
The Gloucester House Restaurant at historic Seven Seas Wharf, 63 Rogers Street, Gloucester. This is owner Lenny Linquata.
We provide service and product better than anybody else. It comes directly from our boats right to your plate. We have fishermen that work great for us. We are wholesalers that we buy what we want to serve to our customers, and we put the rest of it right out in the market.
The Gloucester House Restaurant. Visit thegloucesterhouse.com.
This is the freshest seafood you can get from our boats to your plate.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our first guest is Cynthia McClory, the Executive Director of North Shore Mediation Program. Cynthia, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Josh. I'm glad to be here.
Well, let's hope that the connection stays up and we don't run it. But so we're going to do take two from last week. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we can talk about mediation and what North Shore Mediation Program does.
Sure, that'd be fine. So I have been with the center for about 17 years, originally from Pennsylvania, relocated to Massachusetts after college, and have worked in a few other areas, college administration, and also for the State Office for Children, which is no longer. But at that position, I was recruited to the Salem Mediation Program to help establish a juvenile court mediation program there in the Salem and Peabody courts. That Salem Mediation Program was funded partially by a probation position which lost its funding and the program closed. But I think what is significant about that is the volunteer mediators were so passionate about what they were doing that they pooled their funds and created North Shore Community Mediation Center, an independent nonprofit with total roots in this volunteerism, and they, for the first 4 to 5 years, really ran the office, paid the bills, trained the mediators, mediated the cases. It was an incredible beginning for the center, and then I joined the center in 1999. So,
great. So tell us about mediation for those who in a listening audience aren't familiar with the term or what the practice is. Tell us what it is and how it works.
Sure. So mediation is a process. It is a facilitated discussion lack of a better way to describe it. And I think it is important for the listeners to understand what it is, because I think it gets confused a lot of times with some other alternatives, things like conciliation and arbitration, which are words that maybe they might be more familiar with. But it is a facilitated conversation. So when people are in conflict of all different kinds, they can enter into this process and we use a co-mediation model, but where neutral mediators can help them hear each other in a different way and help them think about ways they might want to resolve it. It's a very future-oriented. It's not a lot about the past, although the conflict may have roots in the past. They really are talking about how they want to go forward. And I think some of the important parts of mediation are the confidentiality and the voluntarism, and that these mediators it is a totally neutral process. So people come to it because they want to. because they think that there's a this is a process that could help them move forward, and they know that what happens in that mediation room stays there. So they don't. It's a confidential. The mediators are not going to discuss this outside of the discussion. So so it's an empowering process. People who enter into a process walk away feeling as though they have been heard, they have had a part in the resolution, and sometimes if it doesn't come to resolution, they feel as though at least they understand each other a lot better.
And that's, isn't that a really important distinction to the notion of that they had a say in the resolution, that mediation is a process that allows people to chart to a certain extent chart out what the outcome could be, as opposed to having it going before court and having a judge or a jury decree it.
Right, exactly. And so oftentimes it's evaluated as being much more satisfactory because people do have a say in what they think will work best for them. And another person, whether it's a clerk or a judge or a jury, they may not know what would be best for them. They are going to go by the law, by the, you know, and what they're hearing. So, and think that this will work for them. And the mediators don't give them advice either on that. So I think you're absolutely right. That's a major part of this process, is that people do feel satisfied because it's what they want. So the mediators aren't going to give them advice. That's oftentimes people get confused about that, and we would want to be very clear that they're there to facilitate the conversation. So they're there to help them understand that they come in with a position that they hold dear,
yep.
And that they're going to hopefully peel that back a little bit and begin to understand why they have that position, what their true interests are underneath that position, and that helps them both hear each other in a very different way.
And part of the so take me through the mediation process. So if you meet, let's say two parties come together and mediate. So you start out with an initial introduction, and both. Each party.
Right.
Gives
well, first, yeah. Let me say that we depending on where the case comes from. So
sure.
We are an approved program that does accept cases from the court. We do put in applications to the trial court, and we are approved in the Gloucester and the Peabody and the Salem District Courts, the Essex County Juvenile Court, and the Essex County Probate and Family Court. So we do get cases that way, which come to us. But we also really encourage people to, and hopefully your listeners, to think about us when conflicts come to them. And if they do, to call the office. And if they call here, we will do an intake with each of them, just to explain the process, to make sure they understand that it is neutral, that it's voluntary, to help them understand a little bit about exactly what you're asking, you know, what happens when they come. And so when people come to the mediation process, they do hear an introduction, and it's about all of the things we've been talking about, the voluntarism, the confidentiality, and the neutrality, and they hear that, and then they read and are asked to sign an agreement to participate. It is nothing more than, yes, I want to take part in this process, and I understand what it is. Following that, then the mediators will usually say, let's hear what's going on, and either one of them can start, and the other can contribute, and a lot of times there will be an opportunity for the mediators to take a slight break and then maybe invite each of them individually in for a short session, and then the other in, and then maybe bring them both back together, helping them hear each other. And maybe sometimes those individual sessions, the result of that is they're saying some things that maybe they couldn't say in front of the other person, but they might allow the mediators to say that in a different way to the others. So, and this whole process, the mediators are using skills that they've learned that include, you know, these facilitation skills and helping people hear each other better and asking the kinds of questions that allow them to really reveal what's going on, and so they've been trained in those skills.
It's trying to understand the card behind the card, if you will, of okay, this is what, at a surface level, this is what you're saying, and you're very upset about this and all of that. But when push comes to shove, what are the issues that you need to have resolved?
Yeah, and what's important to you? What is important, and how could we help you work with this other person or other people to reach that, you know, to sort of get some satisfaction? And it may be that, you know, it's a wide variety of interests and needs, and it could be an apology. It might be just that. It could be, I mean, we do a lot of mediations for consumer issues, so it could be a broken contract. We do family issues, parent and child. We work with divorcing couples or couples who want to stay together, neighborhood issues, landlord-tenant issues, just a wide variety of issues that, you know, that some are very emotional, some are very, a little bit more concrete in what they're looking for. But all of those have that human part, you know, and that emotional part, and what, you know, what someone's feeling and what someone needs. You're right, those underlying needs.
And when you break down into the private sessions with the parties, they're open. They may open up and say things that they, as you said, wouldn't say with the other party present. But when you said the confidentiality part, what I understand is that the mediator, the facilitator, then says, "Now, of the things that you've shared with me in private, what is it that you don't want me to share when we're back into the group session?"
Correct. So we never want to break that confidentiality. So it's very important for them to have this space that belongs to them, and that they can say what they want to say. But and sometimes they will say, "Please don't share that. This is, you know," and so that's fine, and that won't be shared. But just as you say, asking them what they don't want to have shared gives them an opportunity to sort of protect themselves or protect their concerns, and that would never be repeated.
Do you find that when the mediators are having that exchange, that it gives the individual party some room to say, "Well, you could say that"? I mean, they're kind of say, well, it's helping to get the wheels going in terms of what might lead to a resolve.
Well, sure, and that's the building of trust. And I think that what we try to do from the very beginning, the very early inquiry, when someone calls, we start with building trust about the process and building trust in our center. And yes, so when you get to that point where people are now have spent some time with these two mediators and are beginning to trust that the process is working and working for them, that they may in fact feel a little bit better about, well, you know, maybe if you tell them this, maybe this will happen, and so it does open up the communication and the possibilities for resolution. Yeah.
And the other I thought important piece of the confidentiality part is when a mediated agreement does not emerge. So two parties come together, they mediate, and it doesn't end in a mediated resolve. Neither of those parties, so the mediator is still bound to that confidentiality. They can't be deposed by either party in a civil or criminal case to say, "Well, they told me this." They're still bound by that confidentiality.
Correct. They can never be called into court to testify or anything. And that's the agreement to participate, which is signed before they begin the process. So they go over that with the party, so they understand that. You know, and the confidentiality that the two parties are part of. We can't bind them to that. We obviously they know what each other said,
yep.
And they walk away knowing that. So, but I think in the long run, from my experience, it has always helped people to understand each other better. They don't usually walk away more angry, but usually if they don't come to a resolution, they at least understand where the other person was coming from. And the mediation can go on until they're ready to end it. So there's no time limit. And, you know, sometimes if we're at the court, there's a little bit of a time limit, but we can return and we can have the case go on in a different session at a different time. So it has that ability to evolve and with the parties as they get more comfortable with it.
And so the geography of the area that North Shore Mediation covers includes what?
So we are pretty much Essex County. So we are from Lynn and all the way up to Newburyport and out to Amesbury and Gloucester. And so we're pretty much, so we're approved, as I said, in the Peabody, Salem, and Gloucester District Courts and the Essex County Juvenile and Probate and Family Court. So we really are a resource for all those communities. We are a community mediation program as well. So that means that we provide these services for folks who may or may not be able to pay for a private mediator, for instance. So there are sliding fee scales. We don't turn anyone down. We make sure that we are educating the public and trying to make sure that they understand that the services are here. So that's another important part of what we are, the community mediation part. And the mediators are volunteers. So this is what community mediation means, is that they will, when you're in a conflict and you enter mediation, that sitting with you will be people who are not, you know, necessarily from downtown Boston, but who actually live in your surrounding communities and understand your environment and understand what you might be dealing with. So
great.
So those are important parts of community mediation.
And the kinds of mediation groups that you become involved with, could give you a range of the kind of cases, or?
Yeah, so we, as I say, we can get all kinds of cases from the courts. So we do small claims and minor civil cases from the district court. We do divorce cases from the probate court. We have a very good relationship with the Essex County Juvenile Court. So we oftentimes help them resolve some minor delinquency situations where kids are involved in fights but not necessarily have ever been involved in court before. Sometimes some harassment protection orders, sometimes cases, helping them mediate those. So that's a very important part of what we do. But other kinds of cases are neighborhood issues, roommate issues, you know, employer-employee kinds of things, elder mediation where adult children are working out issues with their aging parents. School issues. We also put a fair amount of resources into peer mediation, which we go into middle schools and high schools and help them create a peer mediation program, train students, a core of students who will then mediate cases amongst their peers. And that's the next generation, and they are fabulous at it, and we've had a lot of success doing that.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and I'm so happy that our connection has stayed through all the way for the whole segment.
Thank you.
And
thank you, Josh. It's been great.
Appreciate your help, and I'm sure that our listeners are going to be calling you with all kinds of conflicts to help out.
Hope they do. Okay, Josh. Thank you.
Thank you, Cynthia. Bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Come in, take a seat, you're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street.
Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan, plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright double-hung insert window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and our next guest is Tom Gould from Peabody. You're also a member of the Peabody City Council?
Correct.
And has also been intricately involved in Peabody's centennial celebration. Welcome to the program, Tom.
Thank you. Glad to be on.
Well, we usually start out with, tell us a little bit about yourself, your bio, your family background, and so forth, and then we can get into talking about the magnificent parade and all the things that are going on with Peabody Centennial Celebration.
Well, thank you, Josh. Thrilled to be on. As I said, I'm a lifelong Peabody resident. I'm married to Sharon Spiliotis Gould, and I have two great children, one granddaughter. We live in the Gardner Park section of Peabody, and I'm proud owner of Treadwell's Ice Cream. That's about it on my bio.
Okay. So, tell us about the Peabody. I was part of the Peabody Rotary Club float for the centennial celebration, and I have to say it was a magnificent parade, very well organized. I went home saying somebody on this committee must have worked Macy's because it was so meticulously lined up. I mean, the floats by division and section, and then the cross streets had bands and the other groups that were on that came in, and I just was amazed at how well organized you were. Tell us about what went into all that.
Sure. We started 3 years ago planning our centennial celebration in general, and we picked five events. The parade was the third of our five. The other two were a family food festival that we had at Brooksby Farm back in May. And in July, we had a concert at Peabody High School with a fireworks display that was magnificent. And the third event was the parade. And we started, as I said, a couple of years ago planning the parade. We were fortunate enough to have four people that stepped up to chair that parade, and the details that they covered were amazing. We had City Councilor Pete McGinn co-chairing with Kathy Gravel, the wife of City Councilor Dave Gravel, and we had Martha Holden, our Peabody Library director. And the person that was so valuable was Deb McGregor, who has lifelong Peabody roots. She worked in the mayor's office for 20 years. And we took her out of retirement and asked her if she would head up the parade with the three chairs, reporting to her. And literally, they met once or twice or three times a week for the last 6 months. And almost every day for the last month, going over all those details that you mentioned. We had in the parade, and we were blessed to have you in it as Rotary, a participant of Rotary. We had 32 floats, 30 marching bands. We had every civic organization in the city about.
No, I saw the list posted on Facebook of, I think, 144, 145 different entities.
Yeah.
So.
It went off like clockwork. I visited, we had two command centers. One was for the police and fire, and that was off of Forest Street behind the refueling stand. And the other was up at our public service department conference room. And I was fortunate enough to visit both of those at 5:30, quarter of six Sunday morning. And we already were in full gear. 22 people at the FarmAV Command Center going through all the details involved, the public safety end of it, the transportation end of it, the communication side. So there wasn't a stone left unturned that wasn't covered. So we were well prepared, but that was because of all the hard work of all the volunteers. We had over 300 volunteers help us that day.
Wow, that's a good thing. And the weather held out?
When it did, it was great. And thank goodness it wasn't Saturday.
Yeah. So what are some of the other activities that have been part of the Peabody celebration beyond what you've described so far?
Yeah, we got some more coming up. We have a birthday party that we're going to hold in City Hall at the Wigan Auditorium at a midterm inauguration, and it's literally going to be a cake event celebrating our 100 years of the city. And then we finish the whole celebration May 7th of next year with a ball at the mall. We're holding a very formal ball for 400 to 500 people at the North Shore Mall. We're taking over a wing of the Ball and North Swing, as we call it. And we're going to have a swing band along with a catered meal and a very formal event to finish our festivities. So we've already started planning that, and we're very much looking forward to having the remaining two events.
Great. And tickets for that are on sale already or soon?
Very soon. We're just finalizing some details that be able to put a cost associated with it. And we'll be selling those at peabody100.com. And that's our website for anybody that's interested. And there's still volunteer opportunities for folks if they'd like to get on board.
Great. Now, you had, it was an after parade event that took place. I didn't go to that, but I know that there was something that was going on. Tell us about that.
Sure. It was up at our, I call it our signature park, Emerson Park. We had a number of food trucks and entertainment, along with a beer garden. It was very, very well attended. I bet you at any point there was 1,000 people coming and going from that, and it's a great way to end the day. The parade ended about 1:30, and everyone, because the parade was close enough to Emerson Park, everyone that wanted to come up to the park walked up and had themselves a grand old time.
And I know that you had to do some coordination with the state highway department because of the parade route in Peabody, they had to shut down the Lowell Street exit. Was it exit 26 or whatever?
We were fortunate enough that the state allowed us to close that down with the alternate route being the 114 exit at the North Shore Mall. So anybody that wanted to go Lowell Street had to go about another half a mile up the street and hop on it. It's a busy weekend on the North Shore. It was a busy weekend with our parade and the Topsfield Fair and the Salem Halloween haunted happenings. But as you mentioned, it couldn't have gone on. It went off without a glitch. It couldn't have gone any better.
And you had law enforcement. I mean, every side street along the parade route, there was somebody from law enforcement there, whether it was Peabody Police or other cities and towns were there. The sheriff's office was there. How did that all come together?
That was part of the organizing that we did in the last 2 years. We were fortunate as a city. We're part of NEMLEC, which is an acronym for the Northeast. And I'm going to not get it correct, but it's a police organization, and they help each other, help other communities out. when needed. Captain Scott Richards was very valuable. He's the logistical contact within the police department, and he was able to put all of those neighboring police organizations to work. And at some point, I think I heard him say, you couldn't go 50 feet without finding another police officer along the parade route. So if at any point anything happened, and we're very blessed that nothing did, we had no arrests, we had no medical emergencies, everything went off without a...
Yeah, the degree of preparedness was obvious. You know, I'm sitting on a float waving to people going up and down, going down the thing. And the number of, people on motorcycles or those small trikes and golf carts and other things, that how many different police departments were involved. So it was interesting to see that.
It was. And we think we had 30,000 spectators and close to 2,000 participants in the parade.
I believe that. I was amazed at going along the parade route, people along the sidewalks, but also on their porches. The people had cookouts going on. Some of them were dressed formally. It was very interesting to watch the parade from a float, and to see how well it was received by the community. And you guys are really deserving of a lot of praise and thanks for all that went into that. People in the balconies, people leaning out windows, it was very exciting to be a part of.
Thank you. It was a real positive event. And we were, 2 years ago, we also got organized as a fundraising committee. And we had a lot of hard work went into it. Dave Gravel, Chuck Holden, and Ed Lamazny went out and raised us, anywhere from $150,000 to a couple $100,000 to put the event together. And we had various levels of sponsorship opportunities.
That was actually leading into my next question. What is something like? What does it cost to put on a celebration in a parade like that?
Well, we think that the final number is going to be about $250,000 for that event, and we privately raised most of it.
That's great.
We budgeted $50,000 for our entire celebration, knowing that we would have a great fundraising effort that went hand in hand with our city money. So the final numbers haven't been in yet, but thanks to those guys, we took the curse off of a good chunk of that number.
Great. And can you tell us some of the other people that have been involved and in the process?
Sure. We had just various Peabody organizations. The Knights of Columbus was involved with the float. Peabody Lacrosse, Youth Lacrosse. We had certain dance clubs within the city. We had the Polish organization. We had the AOH in Peabody. It goes on and on. And then we also, as support, we had our senior center shuttling our seniors from the center to a location in the square where they had great viewing access, and it was easy to shuttle them back and forth from the senior center on Central Street.
I noticed that you had the wives of the late and former mayors Mavroulis and Terigi in there, and you also had people who grew up like John Tudor and some of the other people who have distinguished themselves in athletics or other areas of prominence.
Yeah, we had the three of the former first ladies, Mrs. Mary Mavroulis, Mrs. Jackie Terigian, and Mayor Michael Bonfanti's wife, Dottie Bonfanti. They were all in an open convertible car.
Yeah.
And we had a number of Peabody's own distinguished athletes, not just the Hall of Fame groups, but as you said, John Tudor, former Celtic Rick Weitzman, Stephen Lamazny, Red Sox draft pick. And it goes on and on. Richie Woodworth, an Olympic skier. And we were fortunate. All those folks wanted to be involved. When they did the ask, they hopped right on board and committed themselves to being part of it.
That's great. And it must have, did everybody land in Peabody, or are people fairly dispersed, so it took some doing to get people to come back for this event?
Yeah, it was pretty simple because it's 100 years as a city and people wanted to be part of it. We like to say that Peabody's a city with a small town feel to it, and everybody knows everybody else. You're related, your cousins are across town. There's a nice feel within the city about coming back and being part of the organization.
We got a few minutes left. Can we talk a little bit about your work as a city councilor and some of the issues you're contending with there?
The mayor's doing a great job of, we've just got through revamping the square into a traditional four-way intersection. If you haven't driven through, I think you'll be very happy with the way the traffic is flowing now. There's still some traffic, and unfortunately there's always going to be traffic. But we like the new look. The statue got moved, and we created some green space in front of the courthouse around the statue and also on the other side of the square. In front of the Sports Collectible Building, we created some green space with the traditional, as I said, four-way intersection. So that's a big project that we've completed. We're working real hard at doing our downtown over. Brothers Deli is about to come back and open up again. We're thrilled with that. We've got some plans in the works for doing some downtown buildings over. Still holding out hope for some major restaurants to come into that downtown area. So there's a lot of good work, and if you want to be involved in things, this is the place to be.
Who do we have? We had Karen Sawyer on recently on the program, and I was surprised at the number of people who on a daily basis drive through Peabody.
27,000 cars apparently go through Peabody Square on a daily basis.
That just was surprising. I'm sure it's right. It just hadn't thought. I mean, that doesn't happen in Gloucester. It doesn't happen in lots of other places. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, and if you think about it, if we can get you to stop once a week to buy something in Peabody Square, it'll be a great boom to the economy. So we're working hard at it.
Great. One more minute to go, and anything else that you want to share with us, either about your work on the council or the Peabody celebration?
No, I just proved that we were able to pull it off, and there's still a buzz going around about the parade. Everywhere I go this past 5 days, is a great job on the parade. What a great event. Thrilled to be there. I want to thank all of our volunteers. If you're listening, thank you so much for everything you've done to put a great shine on the city of Peabody. And thank you, Josh, for having me on the air.
Great. Thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and certainly good luck to you and the rest of the activities coming forward as part of Peabody's centennial celebration. Thank you again.
Thank you, Josh.
Okay.
Thank you.
Tom.
Bye-bye.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Looking for a reliable place to produce your team's uniforms or your business's corporate apparel? Then Sarkisian Sportswear is the place for you. Conveniently located on Route 1 South in Peabody, Mass., Sarkisian Sportswear handles all aspects of your needs, from price quoting to providing visual proofs to production completion. Visit our website, SarkisianSports.com, to view our monthly specials, vendor catalogs, and to request a quote. Remember, Sarkisian Sportswear is the place to go.
Gloria Food Store is still Beverly's number one deli, and no matter what New England weather is thrown at us, Gloria is open. With fresh bread delivered from Sunray Bakery every morning, Gloria can provide party platters, calzones, hot trays, cold trays, salad trays, and finger sandwiches for whatever you have planned. Call in your order at 978-922-3613, stop in at 268 Rantoul Street, or visit GloriaFoodStore.com. We're back with Trending Now. I'm Rick Moore, along with Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And joining us now on the line is Greg Verga, the world-famous Greg Verga, formerly a Gloucester City Councilor and currently the host of Unfinished Music on MSO. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Rick. Hey, Josh. How you guys doing?
Good, Greg.
So what... hold on here. Let me kill the music over here. Got so much to ask you here, Greg. Greg, let's get started by telling me a little bit about how you got this idea for Unfinished Music. Of course, twice a month we run concerts, if you will, unplugged from the Unfinished Music studio. But why don't you elaborate and tell us the genesis of it?
All right, sure. Well, as a lot of your listeners know, I used to go in to chat with you probably twice a month about politics when I was on the city council. And as I wrapped up my term, I sort of lost interest in talking about local politics, and I happened to have a chance meeting running into you, and we just thought we should have some other show. So I says, how about a music show? So that's how it happened. That's the origins. And
Don't even tell me. Don't even tell me. Did we lose you, Greg? Hello? All right, let's see if we're... We're still on the air, so that's a good sign. All right, let me call him back and see who pulled the plug here. Let's try it again. The wonders of live radio. Happened last week, too. So here we go, trying to get hold of Greg Verga. Try it again.
As I was saying.
Yes. What happened? Who pulled the plug?
I don't know. I just went blank. Are we back on?
You were here. Yep.
Okay, so the idea is to get local music, local talent... You know, focus on Gloucester, the Cape Ann area, and surrounding area. And they come in, they play some music live, we play some recorded music of theirs, and we have a little chat about their latest projects or their gigs. And so far, you know, since the first show on June 15th, it's been going pretty well. We've had about, 8 to 10 people, and we've got another 4 or 5 lined up between now and Thanksgiving, and... I'm enjoying it.
Well, so am I, and I think the music is great. If people listen in, we have a tab up at the top of the website actually called, what is it, one to save change? My computer's acting so weird, Greg. Tab up there just called Unfinished Music, and I don't know, Greg, go through a list of some of the people we've had on so far, and again, the format, what do we do during that hour?
Okay, sure, we've had Brian King, Dan King, separately. We have John Jerome in here. Steve Carraway. Last week we had Ricky Diamond, which was a sort of a departure from us, more electronic sound as opposed to the acoustic stuff we've had. This coming Wednesday we have Jeff Small. John Jerome's going to accompany him. Later in the month we have Chelsea Berry on the 26th of October, and Alan Estes I just booked November 9th. So I hope I didn't leave anybody out from the previous guest.
You did. We had a lovely female singer on too.
Ah, Charlie Bianchini.
There you go.
That's right. And so, and as you mentioned, all those previous shows are available to listen to on demand. And what we've done so far, and our focus is to continue. And it all depends on the scheduling of the guests. But we do stream live at about 3 o'clock on Wednesdays, twice a month. I think November we're shooting for 3 shows. And then pretty immediately after, at least within 24 hours, the show's available to listen to on demand.
It's very eclectic, too. I know that we've had folk singers, we've had rockers, we've had, I don't know what Ricky Diamond's genre would be, but I guess electronica sort of covers it. And it's interesting to me to see the mix of the electronics and the unplugged that go into this. With the technology that we have, the sound is terrific, and the great big reason for that is your studio. So, you know, enlighten me about your studio, Greg.
Sure. Well, I set it up. It's kind of funny. This house was built in 1920, and we bought it about 22, 23 years ago. And I was the first owner to actually utilize the basement. It's kind of silly. It's a lot of great space down here. And my band, The Wave, practices here. And over the last 2.5 years or so, I've just slowly, moved stuff around, put some soundproofing down here, and I think it's a great space. We've got everything here, drums, digital piano, plenty of guitars and basses, and nice mixing board, and everything anybody needs to come in and perform. So certainly putting the call out to any musicians, local musicians who have original music, if they'd like to be on the show, to go to the Facebook page, Unfinished Music, and message me, or they could send me an email at greg@gregverga.com. And we'd love to hear feedback from anybody who's listened to previous shows, any of their thoughts for, pluses and minuses, things they'd like to see happen. We've got open ears.
Yeah, and you can also do that on, you can let me know at msonewsports@gmail.com. And Greg, I think the thing that is fascinating to me is, as you said, original music. Every person we've had come in so far, the sound, as I said, it's eclectic. It's across the spectrum, and it is tremendous. And the live in-studio performances are terrific in their own right, but also the recorded MP3s that we play are so professionally well done that it's just a great sound.
Right. It's funny because one of the reasons, or the main reason we focused on original music is we don't have licensing to play cover songs. So, there seems to be no shortage of local talent who've got some really good original music. And a lot of it's available for people to download for free or to purchase for a reasonable price. So each show, the guest gives a little plug about where their music can be found. So I would encourage anybody who is a fan of any of the names we mentioned to check them out. Each show is about an hour long. And, we've had a few bumps on the way, but I think we're getting the hang of it, and it's going pretty smoothly now.
No, we haven't had any bumps at all. It sounds great. You shouldn't say it. It's like when you're on stage and you screw something up. Nobody knows except you. So, no.
Well, I'm new at it. My mixing board was relatively new when we started, so I'm learning. I had a client who is a sound engineer who helped me out, so got a lot of the bugs out.
Fortunately, most of our screw ups have been before we go on the air, so that works. That's worked out okay.
Yeah,
I think, and you bring out a good point. The whole idea is to promote local music and to promote the musicians and what they're doing and the music they are performing and writing and creating and selling. And so, we do put the call out to anybody all over the North Shore. If you'd like to be part of it, let us know. We have room. We're doing these about twice a month. It's very difficult to do more than that. It takes quite a bit of coordinating, believe it or not. And so, send Greg an email, send me an email, and let me know. And Greg, again, some of the performers you have scheduled coming up?
Sure. Again, we have this coming Wednesday, the 12th at 3 p.m., Jeff Small. He's going to be joined with John Jerome. He's going to join him on guitar and do some singing with him. And then I think most people out there are familiar with Chelsea Berry. She'll be in on the 26th again at 3 o'clock. And then Alan Estes is coming in on the November 9th at 3. I've got a few other people I'm trying to schedule in. I don't want to mention names yet, but I'm pretty excited about the response we've been getting from the talent who've been in and others out there who would like to come in. So far, so good.
And we should point out we have a musician in studio, an in-studio musician who plays bass.
That's right. I had fun joining Ricky Diamond on the last show playing bass with him. And, we're working on a project. Actually, when you called, I was mixing a song that we had just worked on yesterday. So hopefully in the coming weeks or maybe the next couple months, we'll be ready to have me as a guest.
Sounds good.
Along with Ricky Diamond.
Sounds good.
Others.
All right, Greg, you mentioned that we did used to talk politics, and I'm going to throw a curveball at you here, and maybe, you know, as an observer of local politics, to be sure, I'm just wondering what your take is as to what's gone on in Gloucester recently. And you can take your pick. You can take your pick of the Fuller sale, which is now a done deal. You can take your pick of the investigations that are going on into the Gloucester Police Department, or none of the above.
Well, I'll talk about those, both of those, if I've got time. The Fuller thing, I've been a critic of the process from day one. I mean, I personally think the city should have utilized the property. It's kind of funny that as we're assigning a purchase and sale to lose 10-plus acres of property, the school committee is out there looking to buy property to build a school. But that's neither here nor there. The one thing I have said to anybody who listened is if the YMCA doesn't end up being built on the Fuller site and it ends up somewhere at the Gloucester Crossing site, I think there'll be some confusion out there as to why there was such a push to sell the Y, our Fuller property, if they didn't use it. Mm-hmm. So hopefully it does end up there. As far as the chief thing, that there's been so, it's been so vague about what actually happened with the chief and then seemingly a separate episode, incident with the sergeant, I have no clue. But I do find it weird that one day there's an announcement that he's fired, then the next day there's an announcement that he's retiring. So hopefully one day the story will come out. But, you know, I think that Chief Campanelle did a great job while he was here, and hopefully the city can move forward and not have another, you know, media frenzy like we had a few years ago when I was chairman of the school committee.
I think the other mystery about the whole deal was that the chief was awarded, or at least he was allowed to take a personal leave of absence, and then suddenly it was changed to a forced leave of absence, paid leave, and, you know, it's a mystery. And my thing, I was talking last week on Josh's program here, last week or the week before, the idea of transparency and disclosure, and, you know, there hadn't been a whole lot of that.
No, I mean, what there has been a whole lot of is rumors and speculation, which is kind of sad. We'll see how it shakes out in the end, but I think when you have a lack of official information, all you're left with are the rumors. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah.
But
well, I would say, editorial speaking, I'm a fan both of the mayor and of the chief. And, you know, I've had many, many, many interviews with the chief, a couple with the mayor so far. And I do respect what he's done, and I certainly hope that, you know, if mistakes were made, as they say, and things didn't go well and the chief screwed up, that it's fixable and it puts in the past and he can move on and we can move on. We certainly, and I will say this, I have great respect for the Gloucester Police Department. I always have. A lot of people, a lot of guys on that force are former students of mine. I know a lot of them, and I think the I think getting this kind of negative publicity for Gloucester stinks, but I think the Gloucester Police Department will stand tall once again.
That's right. Well, and I'll give another plug, or I guess a service that people may not realize the police department does, is they help new parents fit car seats the proper way in their cars for safety reasons. And I, as a new grandfather, I took my daughter's car down there recently, and one of the police officers came out and installed it for us and gave us a lot of information that things have changed in the last 20 years since I had a car seat in my car.
Oh, yeah. Oh, big time. Yeah, we know this as grandparents. And I want to wish Interim Chief McCarthy good luck as well. He's a great guy. Excuse me. Known him for a while and, you know, a good city guy, good city family man and so on. So I think it's going to be fine. Things will shake out and get better. And I had one other point to make here. I know the other thing is I had a number of medical episodes in the past, nothing major, but it required emergency room visits, and sometimes I had to be taken by ambulance. And each time, of course, a police officer will arrive, most of the time before the rescue squad. A lot of times they arrive in tandem, but and each and every time, and I want to say it's been at least half a dozen times over the last 50 years, you know, both the Gloucester Police and the Gloucester Fire representatives who came into my house and helped out, and anybody else I know, have been nothing less than professional. They've been awesome. So I think we're lucky to have these guys do what they do.
Right, and I think that's lost in this, you know, controversy is that people want to use a broad brush and paint everybody, and obvious to anybody who really thinks about it that the vast majority of the police here in town are doing the right thing and looking out for us.
All right, very good, Greg. Any other observations on the city?
No, we'll see how it goes in the coming months, but I'm enjoying being a private citizen, so to speak.
Good, excellent. And one more time, our next unfinished music show.
Wednesday, 3 p.m. That'll be Wednesday, October 12th at 3 p.m. with Jeff Small and John Jerome.
Okay, Greg, appreciate it. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks a lot. Talk to you guys later.
All right, Greg, thanks. All right, that is Greg Virga, who was a former city councilor in the city of Gloucester and also the host of Unfinished Music. We do a couple of Wednesdays a month here on MSO. Try that again. We'll be right back after I hit the right keys here. There we go. All right, we'll be right back.
The Gloucester House Restaurant at historic Seven Seas Wharf, 63 Rogers Street, Gloucester. This is owner Lenny Linquata.
We provide service and product better than anybody else. It comes directly from our boats right to your plate. We have fishermen that work great for us. We are wholesalers that we buy what we want to serve to our customers, and we put the rest of it right out in the market.
The Gloucester House Restaurant. Visit thegloucesterhouse.com.
This is the freshest seafood you can get from our boats to your plate.
All right, back with Josh Arnold. We have continued. We've made it through this segment, and Josh, maybe some other people you've got you're targeted to bring in here.
Paul Crowley, executive director of the Greater Lynn Senior Services, probably next Friday, and several others that we're working on.
Well, and any representatives from Trump or Clinton?
No. But I'm sure the people we have will be voting for one of them.
And I know that you had Lisa, Lisa Orlando, was it Lisa? Orlando?
Amanda
Orlando Kesterson, who was on, I think it was last week, and Dynamite to listen to,
yep.
Representing, well, she's a Republican, but also just gave a great overview of everything, and it'd be great to have her on again. I think
sure.
Maybe we could ask her if she'd lend her expertise to this whole thing. And,
sure.
Maybe we'll see.
Maybe we'd get one from each party.
Yeah, we could do that, too.
Yeah.
We don't have to ascribe to FCC rules. We usually do, just in case, but we don't have to.
Okay.
All right, Josh, thanks a lot. That'll do it. We're going to bail out of here. Don't forget, we got football games tonight. A couple of football games. We have Danvers at Lynn English. That game will be on Channel A. Our live streaming video game will be Lynn Classical at Peabody, both games starting at 7 o'clock. No game tomorrow, but I must tell you that the big game on the North Shore tonight for Division One North supremacy will be Beverly at Marblehead. We can't broadcast from there. It's physically impossible. However, Tim Kearns will be there reporting live on Channel A. He'll be sending reports over to Bill Newell, and they'll be broadcasting that live on Channel A, and we'll have updates as well. So please stay tuned, check us out, and visit the website often, and don't forget to send us along your questions, comments, complaints, or suggestions, msonewsports@gmail.com. So on behalf of Josh Arnold and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, I'm Rick Moore. Have a great weekend.